the glory of old state. For her founder strong and great, for the future that we wait, raise the song, raise the song.
Sing our love and loyalty,
sing our hopes that bright and free.
Rest, O Mother dear, with thee, all with thee, all with thee. When we stood at childhood's gate, shapeless in the hands of fate, thou didst mold us, dear old state. Dear old state, dear old state, may no act of ours bring shame to our heart that loves thy name. May our lives but swell thy fame,
dear old state,
dear old state.
Where else would you rather be? I'm Paul Clifford, CEO of the Penn State Alumni Association. Welcome to the Penn State Alumni Association's People of Penn State podcast. Each week on the podcast, you can expect to hear the voices of Penn Staters talking about what they're passionate about, and you can expect to feel the pride and the power of the Penn State network. You can find the People of Penn State podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Today, I'm joined by Paralympian Jake Schramm. Jake is a member of Alumni Council. He serves as an Alumni Society president. He is the 2011 graduate from Penn State with a Bachelor of Science in Landscape Contracting. He works for his family business, the Cumberland Valley Tree Service and Landscaping, as a landscape designer. And this past summer, he added the title of Paralympian to his resume in the sport of powerlifting, and placed sixth place in the world at the Tokyo 2020 Games. Please welcome Jake Schramm to the podcast. Jake, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thank you for having me.
It's so good to have you, Jake. I've been excited about this conversation. Let's start at the very beginning, though. How did you become a Penn State Nittany Lion?
Well, a lot of people in my family had ties to one of the Commonwealth campuses, Penn State Mont Alto. So with our family and our family business, we have a lot of employees. Probably, I think it was like a third of our employees are Penn State graduates. So we had a big connection to Mont Alto, and that's where I got started for my first 2 years. So it was just a natural decision to go to Penn State as well.
So while at Penn State, what were some of the activities that you were involved in?
So I played basketball at Penn State Mont Alto for 2 years. And then when I went up to main campus after being injured and losing my leg, I got involved with Ability Athletics, which is an endowed sport that Penn State funds travel and competition expenses to help kind of enhance the experience of a student athlete that's disabled while at Penn State. So those were the two main things I was involved in while at school.
This is the People of Penn State podcast. I'm Paul Clifford. I'm joined by Paralympian and Alumni Council member Jake Schramm. So Jake, as you mentioned, sports have always been a part of your life. Besides basketball and weightlifting, what sports did you play growing up?
Pretty much everything. I did again basketball and football in high school. I also did rugby for a little bit right after high school. And those were the sports that I did competitively, and then just for fun and recreationally, I've played pretty much every sport.
So you mentioned the injury and that you had lost your leg. I hope you'll forgive a question about that day that changed your life, but for folks who might not know the story, can you tell us what happened?
Yeah. I don't have any problems talking about it. It's always the elephant in the room, so I'm glad to share. So I was just finished my finals my sophomore year at Mont Alto campus, And it was the week after that. I was home working for our family business. One of our dump trucks had filled up and I needed to take the truck to go empty it and come back. And when I was exiting the highway on a downhill off ramp, I went to hit the brakes and the brake line had failed on me. So I tried to stop, like pulling the e-brake, downshifting, things like that, but I couldn't stop the truck. So I essentially swerved off the road to avoid traffic. And in the process, the truck kind of took a drain swale down to the intersection. It flipped and then I was ejected and landed underneath the truck. So as a result of that, I lost my right leg above the knee. It took several months to rehab after that. I took a semester off of school and then returned for the spring semester in 2009 up at State College or University Park.
So what was kind of your mindset after the injury, right? You're a competitive guy, you're an athlete, and then this happens. You talk about the several month process that you went through to rehab. Were there ever doubts about going back to Penn State or about, you know, how you might continue as an athlete?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely doubts early on, but I would say fairly brief in duration. When that happened, I was just like, I need to basically survive this. And I wasn't thinking about school. I wasn't thinking about jobs or my career. I just wanted to survive and get healthy again. And then soon after that, I was stabilized in the hospital and I could start, you know, thinking about what was possible again. So the physical nature of my rehab, like physical therapy, learning to walk again, things like that, that was honestly the easier part. That I looked at it like a just goals, just like I have all the time in sports. It was more the social, getting used to my new self image and just being comfortable socially, that took a lot longer to kind of get that confidence back again.
You know, you mentioned that the accident happened while working for your family's company and it's the company that you work for today. Did you ever kind of think about, maybe pursuing something else because of what happened and that it happened on the job? And I'm sure there's constant reminders each day, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, but no, I have never considered working anywhere else. We have a very successful growing business that we work in three states. So I was at school for forest technology when I got injured, and I was like, okay, well, until I'm graduated and out of the field, I'm gonna be climbing trees, and I can't climb trees with one leg. So I switched to landscape contracting, which is like landscape design. And that has proven to pull out a lot of my strengths, which were like drafting and creativity and kind of implementing like outdoor construction with plants. So that is really, once I switched and realized I really liked the new route that I was going within school and then how that would transfer to work, I've been really pleased with like everything has worked out along the way, and I'm just happy where I'm at.
So you mentioned the injury occurred while you were a student at Penn State. And while nobody wants to go through the injury that you've gone through, right? It seems like Penn State might have been the perfect place for you to be when that happened, in terms of wanting to continue as an athlete with the quality of our ability athletics program that we have here. Is that how you kind of learned about the opportunities to continue to competing?
Yeah. I mean, before my accident, I just went to Penn State because that's where everyone in my family went. I had no idea that ability athletics was even a thing. I really didn't know anybody that had amputations or prosthetic legs prior to this. So once I started kind of doing research on like learning how, like what do I need to learn how to run again and things like that, then ability of athletics popped up on YouTube and I started looking into it and reached out. And then, you know, what do you know? It's like a blessing in disguise to have this program that there's only maybe only a handful of schools in the entire country that devote resources to disabled athletes in this fashion. So it's something very unique to Penn State and was really critical on my rehab experience and enhancing my student experience in general while transitioning up to University Park.
So you go through the rehab process, both physically and mentally, right? And you get involved with the Ability Athletics program at Penn State. When did you first realize that your abilities were now world class and opened up opportunities for you to be able to compete at a much higher level?
Well, there were a lot of really high class athletes that came before me at through the Ability Athletics program. So Maggie Redden was at Beijing for track and field. Rohan Murphy was a guy with no legs that competed on the wrestling team right before me and was on the Paralympic track. So once I had a chance to like train with them and see them and see that my caliber, I had equal potential as them. That was kind of like the first taste of like, okay, well, I've always had this competitive itch. And maybe now my venue has changed slightly, but I can dive into this route of the Paralympics and continue to kind of pursue stuff competitively.
And what was it about the sport of weightlifting that drew you towards it?
I've just always liked it. When we were playing basketball and football in high school, we would be in the weight room training, and I've always enjoyed lifting weights, just feeling heavy weight in my hand. I have a propensity to be able to put on muscle mass pretty easy. So having good success early on, I think really kind of like cultivated that love for that sport. And then I've had some, like my dad was very strong back in the day and my uncle was very strong. So I've had good leader, good examples of people in my family that have been very like strong physically that I've always kind of looked up to.
So I've been doing some background research and listening to some other things that you've appeared on. Not only are you a world-class weightlifter, right? But a weightlifter has to fuel their body. So you've become like a world-class eater as well, right?
Yeah.
Thousands of calories a day, right? To kind of put that muscle mass on that you're talking about.
Yeah. So I've always had a big appetite, and lifting weights fuels that. When I'm not lifting, if I have downtime when I'm not lifting weights, I don't have nearly the appetite. But frankly, on the backside of Tokyo now, with no competitions in the near future, I'm enjoying not having to stuff my face with food. I don't know, you've probably seen on some of the alumni council meetings, I'm in the background just shoveling food 24/7. In peak training, I do about 6 meals a day. I work with a dietitian to dial in on everything I need. And I do about 4,000 calories a day, every day, just to maintain the body weight that I need to be at.
Well, look, then alumni council's for you, because no one has ever starved at an alumni council meeting. So you will be well fed at our upcoming meetings, when we see you in person. You have participated in 5 world championships. You finished 5th at the 2020 world championships. And then in 2021, as I mentioned, the 6th place finish at the Paralympics. What are some of your fondest memories competing for the Stars and Stripes as part of Team USA?
Really just any time I get on the podium. There's been a few times where I've won a couple World Cups, and I won a junior world championship back in 2010 while a student. So anytime that you're on the podium and especially in gold medal slot where you get the national anthem playing, it's just such a pride in our country. I've been all over the world for competitions, all different kinds of countries. Nothing's like the U.S. The U.S. is very special in a lot of various different ways. So while we have some flaws, there's nothing like it. And I'm just so proud to be able to represent it on a big stage like this.
You know, I'm always interested when I talk with athletes, to talk about kind of the people in their life that they look up to. As an athlete, who are the people that you have watched in your life and served as an example of kind of hard work, competition, work ethic?
I mean, I always talk about my grandfather. He wasn't an athlete per se, but just the and my father, my father and my grandfather both have had great work ethic. Always work really hard. Try to do your best at everything. You know, if you were gonna commit to something, do your best at it, or just don't commit to it at all. My grandfather in particular, he's overcome a lot of adversity. Has worked really hard. He started our company. He's the founder of our family business. You know, he's overcome a lot of injuries also in the past. So he's always been someone that I've looked up to. You know, he fell 50 feet out of a tree and broke his back when he was about 40 years old. So after recovering from that, he left the company he was working for and started our family business. And now we have close to 100 employees. So he's someone I really look up to.
He'd rather break his back for himself than for someone else, right?
Sure. Yeah. He's really special.
Yeah. You have become an advocate for ability athletes and for amputees. What are some of the biggest stigmas and obstacles that community faces? And why is it important to you to speak out and speak up?
There's short answers and long answers. I'll try to be concise. You know, when I first became an amputee for the first time, I knew nothing about it. And I feel like 10 years ago, or I guess 13 years ago now, very few people knew. There just wasn't awareness about, in particular, my disability, limb loss, so amputations, prosthetics, things like that. I feel like there's a lot of people that see you out walking around at the grocery store and they want to say, oh, you know, you're a great inspiration because you're out doing normal day things with a prosthetic leg. So I think in the last 10 to 13 years, the Paralympic movement has really grown within the United States, and there's less of this, you're an inspiration because you're doing exactly what you should be doing in real life. And people are starting to see that you know, just because you might have this very physical thing that you're very outward thing that you're dealing with, you can overcome that and live a normal life just like everybody else. I don't personally think that living with one leg and having to use a prosthetic leg to get around and work and train and all of that's any different than someone that might be dealing with depression or like losing a loved one or something like that. It's just mine. It's very, very easy to see, but everyone's kind of dealing with something.
My only criticism with the Paralympics is that it doesn't get the TV coverage that the regular Olympics does. I caught a little bit of it on NBC has an Olympic channel, right? That that they were showing a lot of the competitions, but I don't know. I love the Olympics, right? I watch sports that I wouldn't watch throughout the year. I'll watch it because it's Team USA competing and we'll cheer for it. And exactly. I imagine a lot of people would feel that way about cheering on Paralympic athletes. How do we get more TV coverage for this?
I don't know. It was, this games, the Tokyo games, had unprecedented coverage within the United States for TV coverage, way more than what happened in Rio. And we've got to be very thankful for that. However, the Paralympics are the third largest sporting event in the world in terms of global views behind the Olympics and the World Cup. So the United States is really lagging in terms of how it views Paralympic athletes as equals to the Olympic athletes, as compared to, like, say, countries like Great Britain or China, where they fund them in an equal fashion. So it was really disappointing. I'm really glad that NBC gave unprecedented coverage. However, there was only coverage of 7 out of the 19 sports, and powerlifting, you know, I think it's really cool to lift weights, but I guess it's not as sexy to cover as some other sports like swimming or track. So there was no coverage of my sport. So not even live streams. So it was really disappointing to have competed on the largest stage and not have my friends and family be able to kind of watch that in live time.
Yeah, I was looking at the TV schedule and the live stream schedule, trying to see you as he competed live, and there just wasn't the ability to do that. And so maybe in 2024 and by 2028, we will have come much further in that regard. What are your plans for 24 and 28?
Well, I have been very unbalanced in the last couple of years of being selfish with my time outside of work to train for and qualify for the Tokyo Games. So I'm going to take a couple years off of Team USA. Right now I'm officially retired. And I'm just looking forward to, I've got a lot of vacations with my wife I've got to make up for. So I'm looking forward to the next couple years, just traveling a lot more with her and spending time that we just typically don't get to spend together because of all my competitions. So as a result of not going to these competitions, for our sport, that'll take me out of, I'm not worried about 2024 Paris Games at the moment. Part of me would love to, I'm only 33 and I'm just entering the prime of our sport for the years are like 35 to 45. So I would be 40 for the LA Games. I would love to have a comeback for that. But we'll see how this time away goes. I'm just at the moment really looking forward to doing some traveling and being home a lot more.
Absolutely. This is the People of Penn State podcast. I'm Paul Clifford. I'm joined by Paralympian, alumni council member. He's the president of the Mont Alto Alumni Society, Jake Schramm. Jake, let's talk a little bit about the work that you're doing professionally now and how Penn State set you up for your career in landscape architecture.
Yeah, I mean, as a landscape designer, it was the perfect segue for a lot of the job opportunities within the industry that my family business is. So I really, even though I switched into landscape contracting as a result of my injury, it's been really a blessing in disguise. I work as a landscape designer, mainly on residential properties, doing outdoor patios, outdoor kitchens, tree plantings, things like that. We do some work for some universities and some businesses, but that's what I do day in, day out, and that's what pays the bills for me, not anything lifting.
You know, I've mentioned your volunteer service to Penn State. How did you get involved with the Mont Alto Society, and how has that led to other opportunities to serve your alma mater?
Well, like I said, our family has a strong connection with a lot of people, faculty and staff at the Mont Alto campus. So I've always been involved. I've helped with landscape improvements there and designing projects for them. So recently, you know, they're always just looking to recruit new board members. And so a few years ago, they asked me to join. And I personally was never one to want to join groups in school. I'm a social recluse. I don't like, I'm just not that social. So kind of in the professional world, I just told myself, try to say yes a lot more than I say no. So I joined it to, you know, help out the campus, give back, make some connections. And from there, I guess they like me enough to make me president or elect me president. And I'm just really enjoying the time on the board and what we do to help improve the day-to-day experience for the new students.
Well, Jake, on the People of Penn State podcast, we like to have a little bit of fun here. So I have some lightning round questions that I'm going to ask you. So
okay.
First question is, what's the most recent show that you've binged on a platform like Hulu or Netflix?
We did Queen of the South on Netflix. That was probably the most recent one.
Excellent. Excellent. How about your favorite class at Penn State?
My favorite class would probably be my very first one that was industry related and that was my freshman year, dendrology, which is like the identification of trees and learning that. We had a really good professor that I've always enjoyed. And we would just kind of take hikes around campus and the local mountains, learning and identifying trees and how they grow and things like that. So that was really cool.
If you could have dinner with anyone, who would it be and why?
That's a tough one. I would say, you know, just keeping at Penn State, Cale Sanderson, I would love to have dinner with him. I think he is the epitome of a winner, and he's won at every level and continues to do so as a coach. And I would love to pick his brain.
You have traveled the world competing for Team USA. What's your most unusual We Are moment? Maybe an unexpected place where someone identified you as a Penn Stater and you exchanged the We Are?
Probably maybe in like, I ran into some Penn Staters that were Penn State firefighters back in, I think the State College firefighters in Chicago a couple years ago, where they were traveling out for a funeral or something. And so that was probably the furthest place.
How about your favorite Penn State sport?
Football.
Okay. And on a 4,000 calorie a day diet, what is your favorite flavor of creamery ice cream?
Peanut butter swirl, anything peanut butter related.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Jake, we want to thank you for joining us on the first ever People of Penn State podcast edition. We're off to a great start, and that's because you've allowed us to share your story. We're grateful for that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, and I'm excited to be here as well. I appreciate it.
Well, to you, our audience, if you like this episode, I hope that you will subscribe to the People of Penn State podcast in your favorite podcast app of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or drop us a review. Help us spread the word, share the podcast with your friends and fellow Penn Staters via social media channels, and tag the Penn State Alumni Association with at Penn State Alums. If you're a member of the Penn State Alumni Association, thank you so much for your support. If you're not a member yet, what are you waiting for? Go to our website at alumni.psu.edu, and you too can become a member of the world's largest alumni association. Thanks for all you do. Thank you for listening, and for all you do for the university, for the glory, and for the future. We are...